And we're going to start out with Dr. Lieberman talking about introduction to RV use. Jay.
Thank you, Dr. Barney. I'd like to note that I have no disclosable interests. Most notably, I will not be generating any RVUs for giving this talk, despite the considerable resources utilized to prepare it. Several months ago, Dr. Barney asked me to provide this talk about introduction to RVUs. And my first thought was, what exactly is an RVU? And in my conversations, my anecdotal conversations with surgeons in my network or around the region of the country, I think we oversimplify it. It's almost like we feel that RVUs are a unit of currency almost. I just did a lap Coley. I earned 10.47 RVUs, and I'm going to go buy a cup of coffee with that. We all know that that's not true, but we oversimplify. So to be simple about it, an RVU is actually a unit of measure of the resources utilized to provide a service. Right? So if you do a service, if you provide a service that is valued at 2.0 RVUs, in theory, it utilizes twice as many resources that a service that is valued at 1.0 RVUs would be, and half as many as a service that is 4.0 RVUs. So in the next 15 to 20 minutes, this is what we'd like to cover. Why do we have RVUs? What are the components of RVUs? I keep saying resources utilized. What are those resources? What are the components of an RVU? And how are RVUs valued? How does lap Coley equal 10.47? Is it random, arbitrary? So we're going to touch quickly on all these goals. So first, it's important to understand where we were in order to understand where we are. So RVUs were technically born in 1992. Prior to that, physicians were paid by something that's called usual, customary, and reasonable, UCR. So they just submitted a claim to CMS and they were paid. And CMS basically says that UCR is the amount paid for a medical service in a geographic area based on what providers in that area usually charge for the same or similar healthcare services. And Dr. Guand, our brother surgeon from here in Boston, says it much more succinctly in one of his books, and that UCR is more or less whatever doctors wanted to charge. So here's a map of what we're talking about. And these are all hypothetical numbers, and it's just I'm being dramatic just to kind of paint a picture here. But it's entirely possible that prior to 1992 that there were three colon resections scheduled for the same day in the same hospital in Boston done by a general surgeon, an oncologic surgeon, and a colorectal surgeon. And each of those surgeons were compensated differently. And to make it even more dramatic on that same day, if you move out towards Springfield and even towards the Berkshires, it's possible that colon resections on that same day, all the surgeons doing those cases would be compensated differently, even though more or less the resources utilized were the same. So this really represents what the issues with UCR were, right? And that is, number one, that the compensation varied by region. And it also compensation varied by specialty, and even within specialties within each region. And compensation varied regardless of the resources utilized. And what I mean by that is you might provide a service that took 1 hour and minimal amount of stress and hypothetically be compensated $300, and then turn around and provide a service that took 3 hours and was maximally stressful and be compensated $100. It was irrelevant of the resources utilized. And it also led to unchecked increases in compensation. And that's obvious, right? If I'm submitting my charges willy-nilly, it's going to just keep going up and up as the years go by. So the government said, hold on a second. This is not sustainable. We need to do something to get rid of the UCR and to have a sustainable future for healthcare reimbursement. And they approached a group at Harvard, and the solution that the Harvard group came up with is called the Resource-Based Relative Value Scale, or RBRVS. And this scale essentially removed the price of services from medical decision-making process. It states that payment for physician services should vary with the resource costs for providing those services. It was intended to improve and stabilize the payment system, allowing the physicians an opportunity to improve upon it. And, in fact, it's the current physician payment system used by CMS and most other payers. So, essentially, they invented the RVU for healthcare, the relative value for unit of work. And it's broken down into three separate components: work, practice expense and professional liability. And here's the average weight of each within the equation for total RVUs. And as employed surgeons, myself included, we really only think about work RVUs, but there are practice expense and professional liability components to the total RVU. So as we move forward through the next couple of slides, it's important to remember that we are talking about the typical patient, right? It's the average amount of work paid. It's the average amount of work done for the majority of the patients that you treat. Right? And the resources utilized, what are we talking about resources? We're talking about time, the time it takes to care for the patient, the effort it takes, the skill and intensity it takes to care for the patient, even the mental effort and stress. And believe it or not, training expense is actually factored into that 10.47 RVUs that you get for a gallbladder. So they realize, and it might be very small, that the training that you do to be able to provide that service to that patient is compensated. So work RVUs is separated into three components. And again, this is the typical patient. There's pre-service, there's intra-service, and there's post-service. Pre-service is anything that you do that is not separately billable in order to get that patient ready for the OR, up to skin incision. Right? That includes preoperative evaluation, admission orders, informed consent, reviewing any records, communicating with the cardiologist for perioperative risk evaluation, dressing, scrubbing, and waiting, and prepping and positioning. So when you're scrubbing and you're frustrated that it's taking you too long or whatever, just realize that in those 10.47 RVUs, you're actually getting compensated for scrubbing. And positioning, too. So APRs, it takes a little bit longer to position. In those RVUs for an APR, they do compensate you, however very small probably, for positioning the patient. And intra-service is straightforward. It's the majority of the work, and it's skin-to-skin. And then the post-service is any service that you provide for that patient in the global period, whether it's 0, 10, or 90 days, that is not separately billable. So if you do a mastectomy and they have a pilonidal cyst, that's separate. So anything that's within the global period of the original index procedure. That's post-op, hospital service, discharge service, and follow-up visits. And again, to oversimplify things, I've heard people say, well, I earned 10.47 RVUs for this gallbladder, but I have to see the patient the next day because they were admitted for observation. Then they come back to my office, and I have to see them to check their incisions and talk about their pathology report. And then 2 days later, they call me for a work note. And that's not compensated, but it is, in fact. That's all included in the 10.47 RVUs that we're credited for doing a lab chole. And when it started in 1992, the Harvard team basically estimated intra-service and extrapolated pre- and post-service work for each CPT code. There was no precedent, so they invented it. So to move on, there's practice expense RVUs, and that's essentially the cost to run a medical practice. Right? And there's two different parts of practice expense. There's a facility, which is any service that's provided in a hospital or a hospital-owned site like an ambulatory surgery center, and non-facility, which is essentially your office. And then there's professional liability RVU. That's the cost of malpractice insurance for a physician in the physician's practice. So here's the equation again. Total RVUs equals work plus practice expense plus professional liability. So CMS identified the fact that it's in all three of those components, it's more expensive to take care of a patient for a lap chole in Boston than it is in Sioux City, Iowa. So they added the GPCI, the Geographic Practice Cost Index, to the equation. And that adjusts payments for differences in practice costs across geographic areas. And they also have a conversion factor, which converts the total RVU into an actual dollar amount. This is set by CMS and changes every year. And in 2016, it was 35.80, and in 2018, it's 35.9996. Somebody in CMS somewhere is gloating over the fact that they saved 0.4 of a cent. So here's the formula written out. Work RVU times work GPCI plus practice expense RVU times practice expense GPCI plus professional liability RVU times professional liability GPCI times a conversion factor is the total amount of dollars you get, the facility or the non-facility gets for those CPT codes. So here's an example, lap chole 47562. The total RVUs is 19.04. I keep saying 10.47. That's the work. That's what we all care about. But the actual facility, the actual total RVUs is 19.04. So here's the reimbursement facility reimbursements for these, assuming the GPCI is 1.0. In 2016, the facility would get $681, in 2018, $685. And here's another way to look at the GPCI. This is for partial colectomy in 44140. This is 2007 data. Again, it's not accurate to 2018, but one of the most important parts of this slide is look at the conversion factor. It's 37.8975. I didn't type it wrong. It was higher in 2007 than it is in 2018. All right, so if you look at this slide, look at practice expense. The multiplier for San Francisco is 1.458 for the GPCI, and for Little Rock, it's 0.847. Essentially, that's saying that it's almost 50% more expensive to provide for practice expense in San Francisco than it is average, the 1.0. And it's not much less, but it's less expensive in Little Rock, 0.847. And if you look at the professional liability, it's the same thing. New Orleans is 1.240 for professional liability GPCI. And every other city on this slide is less than 1.0. Little Rock is 0.389. So according to this, New Orleans is more litigious than the rest of these cities, in 2007 anyway. So the facility compensation, again, there's no non-facility for colectomy. The facility compensation for San Francisco was $1,394, Boston was $1,313, New Orleans is $1,227, and Little Rock was $1,111. This is just looking at facility versus non-facility for internal hemorrhoidectomy, rubber band ligation, 46221. Right, so the work is the same, right? Whether you do whether you band a hemorrhoid in your office or in an ambulatory surgery center, the work is the same, 2.36 RVUs, and the professional liability is the same, 0.36 RVUs. But the practice expense is different. The facility is valued at 2.77, and the non-facility is 5.0. Now, the overhead for the hospital and ambulatory surgery center in total is more than for a non-facility, but per case, it's much more expensive to band a hemorrhoid in a non-facility. That's why the practice expense RVUs are higher. So it's $197 compensation versus $277 compensation. Just another look at practice expense, lap Coley 47562 versus lap Coley with cholangiogram 47563. The practice expense is only 0.3 RVUs higher. So if we add those 0.004 of a cent to the conversion factor and just say it's 36, and you're getting 0.3 RVUs more, that's $12 more the facility compensation is for a cholangiogram. And I trained in the same place that I work. When I trained, we did routine cholangiography on everybody, no matter what. No stones, whatever. And shortly after I finished training, the chairman said, no more routine cholangiography. And this is one of the reasons. The expense, the equipment expense, is more than we're getting compensated to do these cases. So how does RVU get assigned to a code? Well, the first step is actually you need a code, right? You either have to fix a code that's already existing or add a new code for a procedure that is not existent. And the AMA has a CPT panel, as Dr. Barney was stating, and that panel is authorized to revise, update, or modify existing CPT codes. So they update it annually to ensure that it accurately reflects current medical practice. You could add new codes. There's a whole bunch of new codes added when endovascular surgery was just starting. You could delete codes that are no longer used, or you could revise procedure descriptions to make sure that it's current. And these changes necessitate the RBRVS to be updated annually. So the next step, once there's a CPT code for a procedure or a service, is it's sent to the RUC, which is the RBRVS Update Committee, another AMA committee. And this is a multi-specialty committee which basically describes the resources required to provide a physician service. So the RUC provides a recommendation to the CMS, but the CMS... it makes it very clear that all final decisions about what Medicare is going to reimburse is made by CMS and not the RUC. So we have representation on both. We have representation on the RUC, and he'll be speaking later. So I give him a warm welcome. So then the code is assigned an RVU value, and the process to actually come up with the 10.47 or whatever it is. What happens is if the RUC will ask any pertinent society to survey at least 30 practicing physicians. And by that, I mean, if it's a hemorrhoid-type code, maybe they'll ask the colorectal group or the ACS. If it's a vascular-type code, it might go to the Society of Vascular Surgery and the ACS. But those physicians will receive a survey, and they'll be asked to review the code descriptor or the vignette, which is basically the CPT description of the typical patient. You'll identify a reference procedure, so there'll be 10 or 20 reference procedures that you can pick to refer your surveyed code to. And then you estimate your time, right, pre, intra, and post. And now, when you get these surveys, if you get these surveys, it's very important that you fill them out, because the more data that we have, the more accurate the data is going to be. And we ask that you fill them out very thoughtfully and accurately. So the post-procedure time, the post-service time, should accurately reflect that visit that you think you're going to have at post-op in the office, or that phone call that you think you're going to get for a work note and so forth. And the pre should also, well, they should all be accurate, but the pre, you know, these days, when I fill these out every once in a while when it's appropriate, I add 3 minutes to my wait time, because the chloroprep to dry is 3 minutes that are not, probably not in any of these codes. And it's a minuscule amount. Don't lose sleep over it. But it's something that we just need to remind everybody to just be accurate, down to the minute, really, is to don't round up or down. Just come up with what you think is an appropriate number of minutes to do pre, intra, and post. You'll compare that to the reference procedure that you chose, and then you'll estimate your RVUs. Then the specialty societies will go back to the RUC and say, this is what we think, 10.47 or whatever it is for the CPT code. And the RUC might say, okay, great. They might refer it back to the specialty society with questions or issues, or they might modify it themselves. And then ultimately we'll go to the CMS and say, this is what we think the CPT code should have, and then CMS will do whatever they want. So here's a brief slide. It's the RUC at work. It's just a very simplified way that the survey worked. So it's 49560, CPT code for open repair of initial incisional hernia reducible. Right, that code was valued by the Harvard team, most certainly, because that was the standard patient back in 1992, and it was assigned a value of 11.92. Subsequent to that, mesh repair became the typical patient. Right? It wasn't when it first started, but over time it became the typical patient. So an add-on code was created, 49568, and valued at 4.88. So along comes laparoscopy. And when the survey went out for laparoscopic repair of initial incisional hernia reducible, the vignette, the typical patient, got mesh because it was already the standard of care. So when the people were surveyed for laparoscopic repair of incisional hernia, mesh was included in the intra-service work, when it was given an RVU value of 13.76, which is why for open hernias you get extra, or the mesh placement is valued, but for laparoscopic hernias, the mesh placement is already inherent within the actual code. And that's just a brief look at the survey and a general overlook at RVUs. I want to thank everybody for making time to come today, and thank Dr. Barney, thank the college. And just a